Good morning, or good afternoon, or evening, or wherever you are. I think the only thing we know for sure at the moment is wherever you are is at home, almost certainly at home, as it is for me for the foreseeable future as well, but fortunately it's a nice place to be here. Alrighty, so I've got a bunch of stuff to do today to cover, including some of the things I was just tweeting about with spammy, fishy mails, but there's a few other things on my list first. Number one, of course, is sponsorship. So this week is 1Password again. So a big thanks to the 1Password folks. I don't think we're at a point where I need to introduce what 1Password does anymore. One of the things that did come up actually the other day, I was doing an interview with someone and they were talking about password managers, as in password managers just manage passwords, but stuff like 1Password kind of has a lot more of my digital life in it. So it has everything from my driver's license details to my now unused frequent flyer details, or my bank accounts, or my credit cards. And it's things like when I go and sign up on a website and then I go and buy something and I need to check out, it's like I just control backslash and I autofill from 1Password. So the important lesson there, password managers are not just about managing passwords. And who knows, we might get to a point in the future, God willing, where there are no more passwords, but we'll still need password managers. Maybe we'll call them something different by then. It'll just be like secret managers or, I don't know, something like that. So thanks for folks joining in. G'day, Burton. Coffee, yeah, I cheated today and I went down to my local just after dropping the kids off at school. Best Gold Coast coffee, best coffee in the Gold Coast, hard coffee in Main Beach, favourite spot. Consistently rated best coffee too, which is nice. And as I said before to people who then are very, very surprised by this, but Australia has a massive coffee culture. So having coffee in Australia is just a really, really big thing. Now, one of the joys of this setup with all this lighting is sometimes I find, why do I look blue? I'm putting that light over there. I'm still doing a lot of mucking around with this office setup. And the lighting and stuff is something that generally works well most of the time. Maybe if I flick the big panel lights on, pressing the Stream Deck button with the automation into Home Assistant to turn on the switch. Looks a little bit better. Looks really white. Turn it off. Disappears. One of the things I'm going to do, in fact, I mentioned, I think it was last week, maybe the week before, I want to work a little bit on the sound in this office. And I had mentioned to people that, you know, when I listen back to this audio, so every now and then if I'm out walking or something, I'm listening to a podcast or flick over to this one when it gets pushed into podcast format, just to sort of go, you know, how does it compare? And I find it's just a little bit echoey. And some people sort of made that point. Someone said, oh, just get closer to the microphone. Now, for reference, the microphone, if you're looking at the video, is just here. It is probably about usually 5 centimeters away from my face. I don't think that's the problem. There are a lot of hard surfaces. So I'd spoken about maybe putting some sound absorbing material around. Now, I found something because I was in a shop the other day that had these, which looks really cool. And I'm actually just going to drop this into the live chat so you can see it in there. Ah, and, of course, that massive Google search URL is longer than what the live chat allows. Let's see if I can – what's a big number in the URL? You know, every time you, like, look at a Google search, it's just got a gazillion different parameters in there. And I tried stripping them out, and then I lost the Google Images search. Let's try this. That won't work. Paste that in. I drop it in the comments. So these are called Linga Rosette Clouds. Now, these are sound-absorbing material. They're in an odd sort of shape. And what you do is you can buy a bunch of them, and they don't just naturally sit flat on the wall. They actually come out of the wall. You can make them a little bit three-dimensional. You can get them in different colors, and you can make some of the patterns you see here in the images. Now, some of these, to my eye, a bit garish, if I'm honest. Some of them look super, super cool. And when I saw these in the shop the other day, I was like, wow, that's kind of neat. So I actually think of putting these on the back wall, getting some nice heavy curtains over here where my window is, possibly putting some of them on the wall in front of me as well. And as I think I mentioned last week, getting this camera mounted onto the wall rather than the desk, because I don't like the fact that if I bump the desk, and if you're watching the video, you'll see the video wobbles around. So it is a process of ongoing improvement. Let's just say that. So we're going to try and work on that. all right. Now, moving on to other things here. What is on my list? Oh, NDC today. So NDC conferences. My favorite conference, which, of course, we can no longer go to in the physical sense. but we can go to on the online sense. So I've been going to NDC conferences since 2014. I went to Oslo in the middle of 2014, and then started going to all of the events which are in in Norway, and then started going to the ones in London. We were running ones in Australia. I love NDC that much that in much more recent times, as many of you know, I'm now marrying one of the organizers. So there is I reckon that's about as close as an affinity as you can get to a conference. So anyway, one of the things which I've been doing over the last few years at NDC conferences with Scott Helm is our Everything is Cyberbroken talk. This has always been a really, really good fun talk. When we were doing it on stage, we'd sit there, we'd drink beers as well, and it would basically be me largely taking the piss out of Scott and then talking about a bunch of InfoSec-related things, and particularly pulling apart things which people thought worked well or had previous conceptions of, but then just didn't really work at all. And then we started throwing in just really egregiously bad security things that we'd had personal involvement with as well. So we are doing that talk today, London time. I think it's going to be first thing in the morning for London time. Now, today, of course, will be Friday for London. Today is my time. So it's just under 9 hours from now. So if you want to come and see a fun talk, come so that we don't record it. Now, originally, we didn't record it when we were there in public. All the other talks were recorded in public because we're like, oh, we're going to... It's very ad-lib and, excuse me, and a bit edgy, and we just don't know what we're going to say. We would rather people just be there and enjoy it in the moment rather than have it recorded, and then someone gets like one soundbite and takes it out of context and, you know, stuff happens. We still don't record it, even though you've now got hundreds of people sitting at home watching it, and who knows who's sitting there with a little camcorder. Remember how people used to rip off movies like that? They go to the theatre with the camcorder. Anyway, so that'll be there. We'll be doing that later today. If you can come along to that, we promise you it'll be good fun. Scott doesn't know what's going to be in there yet. Only I know. And it is going to be good fun. Okay, so let's move on to the other things here. So that was the sponsor. That was NDC. I do usually have a list of this. Ah, other IoT things. As many of you know, I've been doing a lot of IoT stuff at home. I was looking for a weather station. I've ordered a weather station. Now, I've ordered a Davis Vantage Pro 2, and I'll put a link to this in the notes later on as well. But this is a semi-professional. It's kind of like the bottom end of the really nice stuff that I could get. It says, it is a professional and rugged. Very important, heavy weather station, rugged. Rugged weather station with a versatile sensor suite that combines the AeroCone rain collector, temperature and humidity sensors, anemometer, which of course measures wind, into one package. So it's all sort of, when they say one package, I think it's going to come in one package, but I'm looking at the picture and they're all like little different bits. And then I was, for reasons of visiting neighbors and things, I was over the other side of our canal the other day looking at our house, and I was like, where the hell am I going to put this? So I'm not quite sure where I'm going to put it. It's going to be obviously somewhere up the top of the roof. But I ordered a pack which also comes with a unit, if I can remember the name of it, which basically then just does cloud connectivity. So it's going to take the data straight off the weather station, push it up to Weather Underground. So Weather Underground does a whole bunch of like microclimate weather. That being like, I don't want to know the weather for Surfers Paradise, the suburb I live in. I want to know what it is on top of my house right now. And Weather Underground is collating a whole bunch of information like that so that you get very, very, very location-specific climate data. So anyway, it'll push it up there. Home Assistant will pull it down, and then I'll have everything in my dashboard, and I'll be able to start doing automations around things like if it starts to rain, do this or that, if the temperature goes over a certain level, so on and so forth. So I'm looking forward for that. That is one of those things which is going to take a while to come. I think the lead time was about a month. So that lead time was a month. My Prusa 3D printer lead time was about a month. I managed to find an Xbox X the other day at an inflated price on eBay. That's got a lead time. So I'm sitting here waiting for all the toys to arrive, and I will be talking more about the toys when they do get here. Okay, so let's have a look. What else we got in here? All right, let's talk about this Exodus thing. Now, because some people on the internet behave in ways that they wouldn't normally do when you're face-to-face, I need to explain all of this in a bit of detail. So here's the chronology of this. I get messages, I would say on average more than once a day, let's say every single day, one or more times, of people sharing data breach notifications with me. And very often it is via an email or via a DM. Now, sometimes if it's via an email, they're forwarding on the email and I get the full email that was sent to them forwarded to me. If it's via a DM on Twitter, very often it's just a screen cap. Sometimes it's a public share on Twitter as well, normally with the person's email address obfuscated and just the breach notice. And the breach notices every single time are structured basically like this. It's like company name and often company logo. Dear John Smith, we're sorry to inform you, but we have had a data breach. Highly sophisticated threat actors. We take security seriously. Yada, yada, yada. Dime a dozen every single day, over and over and over again. Now, what I normally do when I get one of those is I will share it publicly because very often these messages are sent to people privately and there's not a public statement anywhere because companies don't really like to make a big song and dance about the fact that they've had a data breach. I would have shared hundreds of these over the years and it happens so frequently. There's a very automated process. Thing comes in, you look at it, you read it, you go, yep, looks legit, share the information. Now, let's have a look at what happened today. So I'm not going to tell you who sent the DM, but I'm going to read the DM. So this person says, seems like there was a breach with the Exodus cryptocurrency wallet. Now I never heard of Exodus. Maybe they're a real company. Maybe they're not. I mean, who knows? It's called Exodus. I went to Twitter. There was a cryptocurrency wallet called Exodus. Logo looked the same. Now here's what's in the screen cap that was sent to me. And I did actually trim the screen cap down a little bit just to focus on the company name and the text. So this is someone who has screen capped it off a mobile device in dark mode. And the subject is your Exodus assets might be vulnerable. The sender is just a name. You just see Exodus. You do not see an email address it's come from. The recipient, he has obfuscated. Fair enough, is what people normally do. In the body of the email, it does reference his name and it's consistent with the name in the recipient address. I obfuscated his name for privacy purposes. Message says here under the logo, it says, we regret to inform you that we have experienced a security breach affecting approximately 94,000 of our customers and that the wallet associated with your email address is within those affected by the breach. Namely, on Tuesday, January 26th, Australia Day, our forensics team have found several of the admin servers to be infected with malware. Now, there is a grammatical typo in there. Now, you might go, okay, well, that makes it look like a data breach. Let me rephrase that. That makes it look like a fish or a scam. It was only 2 weeks ago I was talking about how the first sentence of Ubiquiti's actual legitimate data breach notice had almost precisely the same form of typo, just like one word that was wrong. Legitimate data breach notices often have bad grammar. At this moment, it's technically impossible to conclusively assess the, and then that's where the thing ends. I cannot see any more. Now, this is what I saw. I went and checked it out. There was an account called Exodus. It's like, okay, cool. I'll share this and I'll say data breach at Exodus. Here's the message. Now, very shortly afterwards, I got some messages from people saying, this is a fish. And then they pointed to some other information. In fact, other people had screen caps which showed the sender's address. And the sender's address was from a Peugeot domain, you know, like Peugeot, the car maker. So obviously there might be some SPF issues on the Peugeot domain side of things as well. But that then clearly looks like a fish. Now, as soon as I got that, I added to the thread and I went, okay, so looks like a fish. Here's what's happened. Now, because it's the internet and people get behind keyboards and a bunch of them become, frankly, idiots, we need to go and break down some of the feedback that came back and why it was idiotic. Now, I made the notes here. So a few things. A few people saying, I was fooled by the fish. Now, yeah, it looked legitimate to me. And the thing is, when you say it was fooled by it, there is nothing in there to suggest it was anything other than legitimate. And again, it falls into a line of literally hundreds of others that I've tweeted. And every now and then, and it would be a sub 1%, I would say, one of these is actually a fish or not legitimate. So yes, that's probably pretty reasonable, but it's also a little bit disingenuous because a couple of these tweets were very derogatory in terms of how could Troy, in his role as an influencer, be fooled by this? Well, simple answer, there's nothing on here that was sent to me which actually indicates that it was a fish. So that's important to understand. Like there is, and if anyone looks at this, even the grammatical thing, like I said, Ubiquiti had exactly the same thing with the legit message the other day. Someone else said, just look at the logo. Now, apparently the logo is not the right logo. And the problem is, You only know the logo is not the right logo if you know what the logo should look like. And for a company that I'd never heard of before, that does make things a little bit difficult. If it was the Apple logo and it looked like a pear instead, I'd go, oh, okay, I know it's meant to be an apple, not a freaking pear, and you'd figure it out. A bunch of people say, delete the tweet. It's the internet. Stuff doesn't get deleted. And I'll give you a really good example of why it doesn't get deleted. I use this thing every day. I keep forgetting the name because it's automatically go there. Tweetbot as a Twitter client. As soon as it sees a tweet, even if it's deleted, it's going to stick there. And I'm scrolling. In fact, very often I'll get a tweet from someone and I'll go to reply to it in Tweetbot because it's seen it right up here. And then by the time I scroll all the way up 10 minutes later, they've deleted the tweet and then you can't reply because the parent tweet no longer exists. Point is, it gets saved anyway. The other thing is, of course, a whole bunch of people screen cap these things as soon as someone does something they don't like. So deleting it, it's not the answer. What is the answer is to go through and add context and to say, okay, well, here's more information. This is what we've now learned. This is what has actually happened. So I really dismay at some of the reactions and the basis on which they came back. So I hope that sort of explains the situation. I got one tweet, which I subsequently realized was from the CEO of Exodus, the allegedly breached company. Now, in fairness to him, like, it would not have been a fun day to have all of these phishing emails going around because a whole bunch of people are going to be sharing this online and redistributing it and so on, and it makes the company look bad. And it makes it look bad for no fault of their own. Now, what was the tweet? Because I want to address this again. I have so many damn tweets here. He said, this is reckless and irresponsible, publishing a screenshot without verifying the claim. That's a reckless and irresponsible comment to make. Now, here's why. It's a comment that's made by people that simply don't have to do this whole process of verification over and over again ad nauseum, as I've done hundreds and hundreds of times. And I've said so many times before how painful it is to get any response from an organization, let alone an organization that has allegedly just gone out and announced a breach, but then it's not the organization, it's actually, if I'm going down a rabbit hole with this. Point is, so many times when I reach out to a company and I actually even have their data, so someone has sent me their data, hey, I've got a million records of your information. It's your customers' email addresses and their passwords and their mother's maiden names, whatever else, and I can't get a response. It is a massively high friction exercise trying to reach out on average to a company to get an answer. And when it's a company I've never heard of before, I don't know if it's some fly-by-night thing. There's a lot of weird crypto stuff out there at the moment. I have absolutely no confidence whatsoever I'm going to get a good response from this company. So this whole idea of I can sit here, run this free service, and then consume massive cycles of my time verifying every single breach notice that comes through when less than 1 in 100 turn out to be a fish is absolute bullshit. And should you live a day in my shoes, this is something that you'd understand. So I've sort of said something to that effect. I didn't say bullshit, but that can be applied. There's no way I'm going to drop everything, craft an email to the allegedly impacted company, chase them for a reply, which often never comes, and pursue verification for a class of message I receive and share multiple times a day. So that's the context. Now, again, look, I feel sympathetic for the guy who's now having to deal with all these phishing emails being sent around. That's a shitty thing to have happen. I hope the other context I've added in the tweets clarifies that, and with this video as well, they understand that this is something which is very difficult to go through and independently verify every single time, as well as actually try and make a living independently of that. Now, what else is in here? Because I have seen some messages floating through here. I might try and keep it on the extra stuff, then we'll go back to the other things. I do have other stuff. I actually got a blog post this week as well. stop throwing blockchain into everything. It's a very small comment. For people asking about Dogecoin, I got none. Dogecoin is up, apparently. It's up 240% in 12 hours. Now, this message was sent minutes ago, so it could be down by now. It could be down 300% because it's crypto. What else is in here? Blockchain. Now, apparently, Exodus is a real crypto wallet. Okay, good to know. Keyboard Warriors, yeah. And honestly, look, if you go and have a read of that thread, in fact, dude, see if we've got any more responses of people getting cranky about it. Oh, I don't want to look at my tweets sometimes. But, you know, I mean, this is a reasonable comment from someone. So someone sort of said to me, I should have known it was a scam as soon as you saw email. So apparently you don't actually provide Exodus with an email address. So this person was saying, well, look, when I got the, or rather when someone sent me the screen cap of the phishing email, I should have known that that Exodus doesn't have email addresses, therefore it would be a fish. Well, again, if you don't even know who the company is, that's a hard thing to kind of establish. And he did later on say he thought I received that personally after I clarified that, look, I don't know. It's a screen cap. I don't know who the company is. Someone here, Igor. Who's Igor? Oh, no, there's a different thing. There's Acunetics now. Ah, different topic. Don't worry about that. All right, looking at the other comments before I go on to the Lemetric. The Lemetric? Lemetric. If you've never fallen for a phishing email as a security professional, you're doing something wrong. So this is a good point. Now, in fairness as well, and this is one of the things that pissed me off a little bit when people are like, you've been fooled by a phishing email as though somehow I've fallen for the fish. If I had have received that email, like actually into my email address, the first thing I would have looked at is who sent the email. Now, that said, I have also made the point many, many, many times before that all of us, including myself, are terrible at reading URLs for all sorts of reasons. This one, however, I've just found the email that, or rather the tweet that includes the whole thing. This tweet has a screen cap that includes the sending email address. Now, the sending email address is exodus-support.io@peugeot.com.br, as in the Brazilian Peugeot, Peugeot. Oh, no, the French car maker. So if I received the fish, that would have been painfully obvious. The other thing that would have been painfully obvious is that if I did have an Exodus wallet, I probably would have understood, as several other people who've had them have explained, that you don't have an email on an Exodus wallet. And then the other thing is, I assume somewhere further down this email, which I couldn't see because I've only seen the screen cap, there was probably a link to a website which then asked for your credentials or some other sort of personal information. And that probably wouldn't have been a very legitimate looking email. For me, if I personally get an email prompting me to some course of action or call to action, I will put the email there and I will leave it. And then I will go to the browser over there and I will type in the name of the website that I know. And then I will go there and log on and change my password, whatever. So there's a big difference between seeing a screen cap that looks legitimate and then actually receiving a fish, falling for a fish and handing over personal information. But to the point made here, if you're a security professional and you've never fallen for a fish, you're doing it wrong, which I think is reasonable because we are all fallible with that. People arguing about blockchain. Oh, I'm not going to get into that. I really don't want to get into that. Andrew Chow, last I checked, Exodus looked a bit scammy. Maybe you're looking at the wrong logo, mate. Maybe that was it. James says, agreed. How do you respond to a mistake? Is your integrity? We all make that. Sorry, did not do much social media much this week. And look, I think James actually makes a really good point. So we do all make mistakes at times. And I obviously made a mistake by thinking that the email was legitimate and it wasn't. So how do we deal with that? Partly by explaining the reasoning like this and partly by then going through and going, okay, well, look, here's the actual information. So I think that's really important. What else in here? More Exodus stuff. But I think we pretty much covered everything that's actually important there. So hopefully that gives a little bit of context. The next 99 data breach notices I tweet will almost certainly be actual legitimate ones. So look out for those. Oh, here's another one, another InfoSec-related thing. Man, this one sucked. I had a message from a journalist this week, a journo I know, and he said, hey, Troy, you see this? And he has sent me a link to a popular hacking forum about data allegedly breached from an institution in Australia. And I won't say which one yet because this does look to be legitimate for reasons I'll explain in a moment. And I don't want to chuck them under the bus just yet. But then again, it is on a very popular forum, which is publicly accessible. It is not the dark web. It's out there in the clear web. And so he sends this to me and there's a whole bunch of create table statements here. And I've looked at that and I've gone, nope, the first time I've seen it. And he says, does it look legitimate as in your info? And I've gone back and looked at it and the sample that's posted is my personal data. And I felt initially a bit stupid because it's like, holy shit, like I just gone back to the journalist and said, yeah, you know, haven't seen it before, could be legitimate, without realizing that the data beneath all the CREATE statements is actually my data, which is interesting. It's hard to tell what all the fields are, but there are enough fields in there that are my legitimate data that it's like, yep, okay, that's interesting. Either A, this organization has had a data breach, or B, someone has cobbled this together with information that you can find publicly about me anyway. But I just thought it's kind of interesting that there's just so much data out there that even when I see data and it's my own, it's almost like becoming numb to it, you know? It's just so much data. Anyway, we'll see with this one. This probably deserves a follow-up because it is allegedly an Australian entity. So it might be the sort of thing that some government people here would be interested in. So I might have a chat to them. Okay, what else is going on here in the questions? why are you guys arguing about blockchain? Unless it's next-gen blockchain, I'm just not interested. Give me the next-gen blockchain powered by AI and we'll have a discussion. All right, next thing. I mentioned last week I got a Lemetric. Now, Lemetric is an IoT-enabled display which you can then plug into via a little API system or a little app ecosystem which can connect to your APIs. I now have my Lemetric running here on my desk. It looks just like this. Now, if you're listening to this instead of watching it, I'm holding up a little plastic device that has a number on it, which is 3,513,168, and a little Have I Been Pwned logo next to it. So this is how many active Have I Been Pwned subscribers I have right now. And, oh, gee, what did that button do? Just pressed a padlock button. Let me explain how this works and then the little bit of coding I did to integrate all this together because I was actually really, really quite happy with this exercise. So the idea here was because I don't get out much anymore and I don't get to go and see other humans, it's very easy to feel a little bit disconnected. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice if I had for Have I Been Pwned, which is used by hundreds of thousands of people a day now, it's a couple hundred thousand a day, it would be really nice to sort of see something visual that like sits there and moves and I feel like I'm kind of connected a little bit. So I tweeted out and I asked people if anyone could suggest a little device to do that. And a bunch of people were like, all right, what you do? You get yourself a Raspberry Pi, you get yourself some panels, you get a soldering iron, some wires and some custom firmware. And I'm thinking, I really wanted this to be easy. I wanted this to be a simple exercise. So some people suggested this little device called Lemetric. Now, I'm going to check on the price of this because it's not crazy, but it is more than what many people felt needed to be spent, $199. So a few people came back, oh, well, you know, you could have built this whole thing yourself for a lot less. Now, I mean, let's say you could have built it for $50. I have a really acute sense of what my time is worth. And $150 is not going to buy a lot of time as opposed to just grabbing something off the shelf and then sitting down and doing what I actually wanted to do, which was write a bit of code. Now, I love that other people like soldering things. Good on you. That's fantastic. Not my gig. So anyway, that's the Lemetric device. Now, the blog post I've written up here, I was sort of thinking about how am I going to keep this number up to date? Because I want it up to date as fast as possible. Like I wanted this thing to be, if possible, even like every 1 second or something. Because I just want to see like the numbers ticking over. I get between 1,000 and 2,000 new subscribers a day. I'd like to just be able to look over, just see that working. It's like, oh, there's humans out there using my things. So I put a question out there to folks. And what I ultimately decided to do is, and this is sort of the simplest, lightest weight way I could possibly think of doing it, is I've used Cloudflare Workers and I've used Cloudflare KV, which is key value. And key value is an eventually consistent, very lightweight, globally replicated data store for storing simple values. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to get the number that's on this thing at the moment, chuck it into KV, using Cloudflare Workers, and then build an API using a Cloudflare Worker so that this thing can query it. So what I ended up doing is I went all the way back to the origin services on the Azure web app that I'm using. So on the web app, there is a feature there which is for verifying your email address after you sign up. So it's got a double opt-in. add your email address, click yes, I'd like to subscribe. You get an email that's got a link in it. You click the link, obviously the link's got a token in it. When you click that link, so long as the token is valid and you haven't already subscribed, all that sort of thing, you are now subscribed and you're good to go. So that is one action which changes the subscriber count sitting on this device, so successfully verifying your address. The other action that changes the subscriber account on this is unsubscribing. Some people no longer want to know when they're pwned. So they go, okay, I'd like to unsubscribe. So they put their email address on the website, they get an email, they click a link on that, it loads up a page and have I been pwned? Are you sure? Submit yes, job done. So on both of those actions which change the value, what I did is I just returned a response header. So I added one response header that just returned the current count in the database. And it returned this to Cloudflare. Now, I was thinking, do I even need to do a count of the entire database again? Because 3.5 million records in there, it's got some efficient indexes on there, but it does churn some cycles a little bit. Could I do this more efficiently? I think I probably could, but this works for now. Because I was thinking originally, like what I'll do is I'll just have one process that adds one and one process that subtracts one, and then we'll just change the value that's in KV. But the eventual consistency situation is what worried me a little bit, because you might be changing a value on an edge node somewhere in Cloudflare that hadn't yet updated to the correct value. So let me explain what that means for a moment. Cloudflare's got more than 200 edge nodes around the world. So when I connect to Have I Been Pwned, I am connecting from my home here on the Gold Coast up to Cloudflare's closest edge node in Brisbane, which is about 80 kilometers that way. And then from that edge node, if necessary, the request goes through to the origin. Brisbane's got an edge node, Sydney's got one, Melbourne's got one, a city near you has got one. Now, you've got all of these edge nodes all the way around the world, and they're all storing this number. Except when I subscribe from here and I hit the Brisbane edge node, and my worker code runs in there and it gets the response header from the subscription verification, it gets that, it changes this number in Brisbane. It doesn't immediately change, let's just pick someone on the other side of the world, it doesn't immediately change the London value because the speed of light, all this sort of thing, it takes a little bit of time to replicate. So the one in Brisbane changes up to 60 seconds later, the one in London changes. So if I was saying, hey, let me just subscribe here in Brisbane and then just add one to this number, and then you're in London and a second from now you subscribe and you add one to the London number and then those values sync, you're going to miss a subscription. So by counting what's in the underlying database, of which there is only one, and it all sits in the West US data center in the Azure clouds, it means that I always get the right number out of the database. So anyway, that gets set in KV, and then the API for actually reading this and putting it in the Lemetric is also a Cloudflare worker. And this is just code on the edge. So it's code that gets deployed to the Cloudflare edge nodes. It runs there and it literally says just construct a response. It's a content type of JSON. Here's the body. It conforms with the Lemetric structure that is required to push the data into that little device down there. And then the cool thing is that you can hit that as hard and as fast as you like. And I have made all those public, so there is a Lemetric app for Have I Been Pwned you can install if you have a Lemetric app, or there's the API you can hit. Because it all sits on Cloudflare's edge nodes, you can hit it as much as you want. It never actually hits my underlying infrastructure. The only time I actually have to process anything on the back end is when people subscribe, and that's when I return this count, pushes it out to the edge. Whew. So I'm pretty happy with that. The only glitchy stuff is that you set a polling rate in Lemetric, and the polling rate has a maximum frequency of once every 5 seconds. And then, of course, you're polling eventually consistent data as well. So you're not always seeing the data exactly as it changes in the origin website. Now, that doesn't matter for this little thing just here. But it means when I'm looking at the last three digits here being 183, it could actually be 184 or 185 or something like that at the moment. I'm just going to see this up to 60 seconds later. So with eventual consistency achieved within 60 seconds, I'm always seeing pretty much the right data. I just realized I spent all this time talking about something which is really fundamentally useless. Right? There's no functional value from this. It doesn't make your life better. It doesn't make me any money or anything like that. It's just like, don't know, it makes me a little bit happy just to have it there on the desk. And plus, when other people come into my office, and often I have journalists or things like that here, it's like there's something there and it's numbers changing. What is it? I did have a little alert which should make an audible sound every time the number changed. I got tired of that within about a day, so I turned that off. So now I just look at the number and, yeah, it's kind of cool. All right, I'm just going to have a look at some of the comments over here. And I without even looking at them, I am going to assume that's people arguing about blockchain. So Darren says he's got an Exodus wallet and didn't receive that email. Yeah, well, that's because, as we now know, apparently when you have an Exodus wallet, you don't actually provide an email and it's not a legitimate email anyway. So there is a valid question, though, which is where did they get the spam list from to start sending email to people? Because I didn't get one either. And I also don't have an Exodus wallet. But I've got lots of email addresses out there in various breaches. So, yeah, I don't know. I wonder how targeted it was. What else in here? Genuine question. How much of data breaches actually occur from dark web? So I have written about the dark web, the dark web before, and I've got a blog post called Making Light of the Dark Web. And it's a little bit of a piss take. If you're unfamiliar with the term, it's trying to show that there is a lot of hyperbole around dark web. And very often when I do talks about things like credential stuffing, so people taking massive lists of username password pairs, usually email address password pairs, and chucking them at applications to see which ones work due to credential reuse, I'll say, you know, people ask me, where do you get this data from? Do you get it from the dark web? Because that sounds really scary. And I'll sort of say, look, it's even worse than that. It's even scarier. You get it from the clear web. And I've literally shown tweets of people tweeting lists of billions and billions of credential pairs. And the reason, quite frankly, the clear web is scarier than the dark web is because it's that much more accessible. So when breached data appears on the clear web, the impact of it is so much worse than when it's on the dark web, because it's so readily accessible by people. Now, I was mentioning a forum that had my own data on it before. That is a clear web website. It's not a .onion address. It's not a Tor hidden service. It is literally there on the clear web for anyone to access. I'm honestly kind of curious as to how this particular site continues to run without being taken down, because it wouldn't be a hard exercise if there was enough motivation. But to the question about dark web, I guess that the chronology that we see for a lot of data is we have a service running on the clear web. I mean, let's say it's LinkedIn. Perfect example. LinkedIn running out there in the clear web. Many of you have LinkedIn accounts, as do I. LinkedIn has a data breach. Where were we? About 2015, somewhere like that. The data is obtained by someone. They will start to monetize it on a dark web marketplace. Now, many of these marketplaces get shut down. Others then come in their place, and the whole cycle continues and repeats. So the data gets monetized. At some point in time, the value of the data goes down because it's been sold to enough people that it starts to leak, or the actor selling the data just goes, okay, look, I've exhausted the value of it. I'm going to start dumping it. And they dump it on forums like the one I was just talking about before, which is a clear web forum, and now has the data circulating. I have a list at the moment of a significant number of data breaches which I'm processing, and most of that data has come from the clear web. Now, I'll give you a sense. How many run here? I've got 25 different incidents here that I'm pretty sure are all seven-figure or eight-figure incidents. Now, they're on here. They've come from very trusted sources, and many of these, I've also got references in here to the news articles about them with the disclosure notices. So absolutely, positively, actual data breaches. I still need to verify and make sure that the data I've been sent is the data from the alleged incident, but these are downloaded from the clear web. So I know the clear web is, in terms of where data circulates en masse, definitely much, much worse. Please stop pimping blockchain. Enough the blockchain. Come on. Could you please drop that name in the chat so we can check it? I'm not sure which name you're talking about. This is for CyberSpeaker Live with InfoSec War. Could you please drop that name into chat so we can check it out? I'm not sure if that was to me or to someone else. That might have been to someone else. Lemetric. Christian Anderson, Troy, I'm taking your course, Hack Yourself First, to my heart. Tomorrow, all the developers in the company will try to hack into your own products. That's really cool. That's good stuff. So I run a workshop, and Scott runs a workshop with me sometimes, runs it with the, on his own sometimes. I'll talk about something related to this in a moment. It's called Hack Yourself First. I originally wrote a Pluralsight course of that name, I think in about 2013, and then turned it into a workshop. I've done the workshop probably 100 times all the way around the world and now all the way from my office. So I run that workshop a lot remotely, as does Scott. We are thinking, just for context, when I say run it remotely, it is normally for a company. Like Acme Core comes along and says, we would like all of our developers to go to Hack Yourself first so that hopefully we get hacked less. And then we spend 2 days doing SQL injection, cross-site scripting, and all the other sorts of things that are a combination of the OWASP top 10 sort of stuff and other common vulnerabilities that we see in web apps. So normally they're private workshops. Occasionally we do them for conferences, not so much particularly anymore now that we're not there in person. We are considering running these so that individuals can sign up. Now we give lots of notice, but for argument's sake, we might say, look, you know, middle of March, we're going to do Hack Yourself first on, say, a Europe-friendly time zone. We'll run it together. He'll run half of it, I'll run half of it, and anyone will be able to sign up. We've got to figure out the pricing and all that sort of stuff. It'll definitely be commercial because it does take a significant time investment from us. But if you're interested in that, stay tuned, and Scott and I will try and get organized and talk more about it. I think as we start to get into Feb, we'll have a little bit of time to be able to start planning this stuff. So look out for that. And in the interim, good on you, Christian. Enjoy Hacking Yourself first. Blockchain. So there's a comment here, which I assume is about me talking about the uselessness of my Lemetric. He says, if it makes you happy, it is not useless. It sparks joy, which is a little bit of the Marie Kondo sort of stuff. So yeah, this is, it does spark a little bit of joy in me. Regardless of what I've done in career and things over the years, like the thing that does spark a lot of joy is sitting down and building things. And I'm sure many of you watching this are the same. Like I like to sit down and write code, even if it might be a little bit useless, because it's just, you know, you just throw yourself into something and create something. And I still find that is the magic of the internet. And it's what I'm really trying to get across to my, particularly my son now that he's a bit older and his mates as well. It's like you can do so much amazing stuff, like literally just sitting in your rooms with a computer. You have that and you're off and running. It's amazing what you can do now. So I'd like to see more of that. All right. So, look, thank you very much for watching. I think that's pretty much everything I had on my list today. I keep looking over at these Ligna Rosette Cloud images of what I could do with my wall. I think I found the one that I'd like to do. So stay tuned. We might see that behind me sometime soon. I want to give it a paint job and a few other things as well. So that's all stuff to keep me busy whilst I absolutely positively can't go anywhere else anyway. Thanks for watching, folks. I shall see you next week.